You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Happy Monday to you. Appreciate you being here with us. Fall's basically here. You can see Ethan and I, we're celebrating by wearing our hoodies. It's hoodie season. Ethan, what do you define as hoodie season? Like, what months of the year?
It's not as much month as it is the first morning that you get hit with, you wake up and go outside and it's in the 50s. That's whenever it's all right to wear a hoodie from then on.
I got it from like September to April. Maybe like into early May. You know, early May, you're going to have a day. That's I was a little taken aback this morning because I always ask Google Home what the weather is. It's one of the first things I do. I wake up and it's 45 degrees outside. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting that number.
Yeah, no, I looked at the forecast last night and I knew that it was about to be, that today was the official start of hoodie season.
It was a beautiful weekend here in Northwest Arkansas Sunday, almost a pretty enough day to make you forget what happened on Saturday over in Stillwater. But unfortunately, about as predictable as hoodies is Arkansas, you know, losing close games. This has become a program problem for the Razorbacks, losing another one 39-31. To Oklahoma State over in Stillwater in double overtime. I picked Arkansas to win this game, and I was feeling really confident about that pick, Ethan. At halftime, really even just a couple of possessions into the game, you could see it really early that Oklahoma State was not going to be able to run the ball, and you could see that Arkansas was going to be able to run the ball at will. And we've talked about this before. So much about winning and losing is how you run and how you stop the run. And Arkansas, I mean, Mike Gundy's quotes were, they kicked our ass in the run game on Saturday. But you start throwing turnovers in there. You start having, you know, just bad penalties. Those are the types of things that can negate the dominance that Arkansas had in the run game. It was thorough domination in the first half. And then in the second half, the Razorbacks just gave it away.
Yeah, and I was thinking throughout the game, I did the five keys for the Razorbacks, keys to victory this week, and they checked almost every box from what I had. I had slow down Ollie Gordon, check. They held him in check. Confuse Oklahoma State quarterback Alan Bowman. He never looked really comfortable. I think they did a good job of that. Establish the run early was my next one. They definitely did that one. But my fourth one was do simple well, and that's where they just absolutely melted. I mean, you can't make the mistakes they made on Saturday and expect to win. It doesn't matter if you outgain your opponent that much. If you continually do the little things like, you know, penalty here and there, fumble, bad pitch, or it really was a decent pitch, just drop the pitch, muffed punt, those things add up. And I think in college football, just there's such a fine, like it's the difference in winning and losing is such a fine line. I mean, and it's, you do the things that the Razorbacks did Saturday and you can't expect to win. I thought it was interesting on ESPN this morning, Bill Connolly, he had a story in ranking the most exciting games from the weekend, and Arkansas, Oklahoma State was number two. And he said in there that he texted a friend, he said, this feels like a game Oklahoma State has won 37 times over the last few years. And it feels like a game Arkansas has lost 37 times over the last few years. And I think that Arkansas fans would wake up and agree with that.
Arkansas led 21-7 at halftime, probably should have led by more. The total yards at halftime was Arkansas 351, Oklahoma State 77. Like I said, it was just complete and utter domination by the Razorbacks. They outgained Oklahoma State 648 to 385. You know, you look at the stats and you say that Arkansas should win this game, but, I mean, other than maybe the turnover line. I was listening to NFL Primetime last night, and Booger McFarland had a great quote. He said, stats are kind of like bikinis. They show some things, but they don't show everything. And so you can't just look at the stat line here. You really got to get, you know, dig deep. And it's about untimely penalties. It's about, you know, the turnovers played a huge role in this game. Oklahoma State outscored Arkansas 18-0 in turnovers. You take away those turnovers, Oklahoma State doesn't win that game. I still think the Razorbacks have a better roster than Oklahoma State. I think Oklahoma State has a better team, and we'll get into that. You know, just too many times we've seen Arkansas do this. They get outplayed in what Scott Hansen calls the witching hour. You know, the fourth quarter comes around, and the game, you know, wins become losses, as he says, and losses become wins. And that's what you saw from Arkansas. I thought the Razorbacks were fortunate even to force overtime. They had a lot of problems. You know, they had an issue where Andrew Armstrong gets a long catch, gets down into Oklahoma State territory, and then for some reason they don't spike the ball. They try to throw it to Armstrong again, and we thought that if Arkansas wins this game, the best thing that can happen to him is that Andrew Armstrong drop the ball, because if he doesn't drop that, the clock doesn't stop with 2 seconds remaining, and then you've got this clock management, just cluster at the end of the game. Penalties, clock management. Arkansas did everything you could down the stretch to lose that game, and then I thought they were fortunate to even make overtime.
For sure, and it's just a shame for the Razorbacks because they did dominate in so many other ways. It was just completely self-inflicted. I think if you wake up today, it's hard for fans to wake up after a loss and try and see what's ahead, but I mean, it is a better team than last year. There's no question the offense is better than it was last year. The defense, I think it was kind of like the BYU game last year. It's deceiving how many points Oklahoma State had because the defense didn't give up just a ton of yards. Mm-hmm. They were working in a short field a lot of times. It honestly felt to me in the moment on Saturday that I was like, if Arkansas is going to win this game, I was feeling this in about the third quarter. I was like, it's going to kind of have to look like that 2021 Texas A&M win in Arlington to where because the offense just wasn't scoring anymore.
And I was sit on the ball.
You're going to have to just run out some time and the defense win the game for you. But the offense put the defense, the special teams too, with the muff punt, like in such bad situations. The defense just couldn't protect the lead.
I loved listening to Mike Gundy after the game. I thought he had a couple of really telling comments afterward. We're going to play a couple of them right now. The first was about conditioning.
I think we won the game because we were in better condition. The latter part of the third quarter, the fourth quarter, and overtime, when you get tired, the first thing that goes is your mind. Mentally, you don't play well. You make mistakes. That didn't happen to our guys. Our guys are in great condition. They were able to function when they were fatigued, and we were able to finish the game, and that's the reason why we won the game.
So that was the first one from Mike Gundy after the game on Saturday. I think culture is one of those really overused words in sports, but I do think that there is some validity to talking about it. I think about like Arkansas baseball. I think culture is a huge reason why they win as frequently and as much as they do. Good culture is going to take you a long way, a long, long way really in sports. Gundy's won 168 games now in 20 seasons, and you look back at Oklahoma State the 20 seasons before that, it wasn't anywhere near 168. So I think culture, especially for coaches who have been at a place for a long time, it is valid to talk about it a little bit. Here was the other one that he had after the game, and I thought this one was quite telling as well.
Sure allows us to function in critical times, in times when most people panic. We don't panic. We take advantage of it and stay the course.
So there's Mike Gundy talking about culture after the game. They've got a good culture. I don't know that Arkansas has a bad culture, but I would say this. Oklahoma State has a winning culture. Arkansas does not have a winning culture right now. We should be talking about Arkansas today having a stepping stone win over Oklahoma State. 4-8 last year. They go on the road. They beat a Big 12 team. Now here comes the SEC schedule. Instead, Ethan, what we're talking about is another close loss. And, it's a program problem. That's what I keep coming back to. It is a program problem. Arkansas has not shown that it has what it takes to win enough close games. And that's why they've got the national perception they have. Mm-hmm. Arkansas is an afterthought on a national level. I looked this up, and I want to read this. This is the one possession records of Arkansas coaches since they've come into the SEC. I won't bore you with some of the early ones like Jack Crow and Joe Kines. Danny Ford was 10-8-1, which actually I thought was kind of interesting given his overall record at Arkansas. Houston Nutt, 22-20 in one possession games. Bobby Petrino, 13-7 in one possession games. Since then, listen to these records. John L. Smith's season in 2012, 1-3. Brett Bielema, 5 years, 8-14. I was actually a little surprised to see that Chad Morris's team played so many one possession games, 1-7. In one possession games. The one win was over an FCS team. And Sam Pittman now 6-15 in one possession games. You add those up real quick. That's 16 and what would that be? 39? 16-39 since Bobby Petrino was fired. It seems like that dovetails pretty well with what their overall record is during that time.
Yeah, and it's the past 2 years, Arkansas hasn't had a bad team. Like, they've shown that they can play with, you know, the Alabamas of the world they did last year, with LSU, with now Oklahoma State, who's defending Big 12 championship or championship game runner-up, and has, like, most of their team back. It's just a you literally just flip a few of those results and your perception changes. It's just you got to learn how to win those close games. And I do think Arkansas has a better team this year that, you know, you look at a lot of guys that came in, and they came in from programs that do have a winning culture. Like, you think of Jaquinnen Jackson, came from Utah. They win a lot of games. There's Rodney Hill, the running back, came from Florida State. They win. There's a lot of guys that have come in from winning programs. I mean, Taylen Green was Mountain West championship team last year. So you wonder if these guys can figure it out. But it does. This is one of those that probably it just hurts from a season standpoint, because you win that one and you're looking realistically at your schedule with what Auburn and Texas A&M have done this year. You were looking at, could we start 5-0 if you're the Razorbacks?
Every team's going to play close games. Every team plays close games. Vanderbilt plays close games. Mississippi State plays close games. The difference between the perception of your program is how many close games you win. Not everybody wins close games. Everybody plays them. Not everybody, you know, wins them. And I think that's the difference between great teams and good teams, between good teams and average teams, between average teams and bad teams. And Arkansas kind of falls somewhere, or at least they have over the last several years. You know, they're somewhere in that last group between average and bad. But I do want to say this. I think there's a difference between program and the team, the program and the team. Last year's team and this year's team, they were part of the same program. They are not the same teams. And we don't know if this close game deal is going to be something that plagues this year's team the way it did last year's team. We know it happened Saturday in Oklahoma State. I think how much they learn from that experience is going to be key for them moving down the line. I look at their schedule moving forward. I think the offense and the defense are good enough to win several of the games left on the schedule. I mean, they play Auburn. They play Texas A&M. They play LSU. They play Mississippi State. All of those games are coming up before the end of October. None of those teams have looked like world beaters to this point. You think about Arkansas's schedule, it wouldn't surprise me if they're 6-2 at the end of October. It wouldn't surprise me if they're 3-5. It's all about how do they learn from that experience Saturday in Stillwater and apply it moving forward. They were really close to, and you know, a lot of people would say they probably should have won on Saturday at Oklahoma State. How do they learn from that and move forward? That's going to be the key to how we remember this season. Yeah.
And I do think it is important to point out, like, I feel like a lot of those one possession losses, especially last year, it kind of was like, wow, Arkansas found a way to be in this game. Saturday's felt different. It was more like Arkansas should have won this game. They were the better team. So I think that should give people hope, at least, that this team does look, it's looked good this year. I mean, the offense is ranking among the top in the nation in so many categories. It's just, you've got to figure out a way to get the job done.
More close games are coming. There's no doubt about that. We want to tell you that Brandon Marcello is coming to the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. It's going to be Wednesday, September 11th at noon. Home 2 Suites in Springdale. You can reserve your seat now at OzarksTix.com, OzarksTix.com. Brandon, a national college football reporter for 24/7 Sports. We've got several lunches lined up throughout the fall. After Brandon, next Wednesday is going to be Jordan Weber at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. The Wednesday after that will be Hunter Juracek. We've got luncheons also booked into October and November as well. You can learn all about that at OzarksTix.com. Hope you'll reserve your seat, and we'll see you there. Always a fun time when we have people come talk to us at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. I come back to the outcome on Saturday maybe having something to do with schedule, right? You look at Oklahoma State. They played a very good FCS team in week one, two-time reigning national champion South Dakota State. Arkansas played a team that would have beaten – I mean, they would have been beaten really badly by that team that Oklahoma State played. In fact, the last time South Dakota State and UAPB played, South Dakota State beat UAPB 90-6, and it wasn't that long ago. It was in 2018. That just kind of shows you the difference between those two programs. I think if you're going to play an FCS team, then play them later in the year when you need a breather. I thought when Arkansas played UAPB in 2021, it was like October the 21st, 22nd, somewhere in there.
It was right before a bye.
Late October, right before a bye. Yep. And so it was like Arkansas got a couple of off weeks, basically, leading up to that stretch run where, you know, they come off the bye and they nearly won in Tuscaloosa over a good Alabama team. They looked fresh at the end of the year, and I think a lot of that had to do with how they scheduled their FCS teams. I think you've got to challenge yourself earlier in the year. And even though Oklahoma State beat South Dakota State pretty handily, I think South Dakota State probably challenged Oklahoma State in some ways. I know they challenged Oklahoma State in some ways that Arkansas did not get challenged against UAPB, because Arkansas did not get challenged in any way against UAPB. I think scheduling might have come down to this a little bit. Oklahoma State had been challenged more than Arkansas had, and it looked like that may have played a factor.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that I feel like every year we get down to the end and there's a team or two that you look at and you kind of can forgive an early season loss because you see that it's a different team than it was at the start of the year. Like this loss to Oklahoma State at the it was week two. Arkansas got beat and looked like the better team. If Arkansas can just right this ship, that's a very forgivable loss. But I think that it's one of those deals where you don't want to have to go through that, losing to Oklahoma State in a game you won. But it can be a lesson learned, at least of maybe test yourself a little bit more in week one to get ready for a game like that. But I do think these early season results, can't put too much stock into them because we see so many times a team will change the course of its season.
You can get the latest on breaking news on all Razorback sports at wholehogsports.com, in-depth source for all Razorback sports. You can go there on the website right now, read about the soccer team beating BYU over the weekend. Huge win for the Razorback soccer team, which remains unbeaten going into SEC play. They're the highest scoring team in the country. Volleyball had a 4-0 week at Barnhill Arena. We've got game recaps from three of those games at our website. Analysis, latest in recruiting from Richard Davenport, unique stories on all your favorite teams. Whole Hog Sports Today. Subscribe, and you can read all of our content there. When we come back, we're going to talk about our position grades, our unit grades. What grade did we give the offense? What grade did we give the defense? Special teams from Saturday. Also, we'll go over Ethan's SEC power rankings. More on that in just a moment, but first a word from our sponsors.
LPGA Week in Northwest Arkansas returns September 23rd through the 29th for the 18th consecutive year. Watch former Razorbacks and 2024 Olympians Maria Fassi and Gabby Lopez compete against the world's best female golfers at the Walmart Northwest Arkansas Championship, presented by P&G at Pinnacle Country Club in Rogers. The NWA Championship is so much more than a golf tournament, with something for everyone to enjoy and activities for fans of all ages. Daily tickets are only $10, and kids 17 and under get in free with a ticketed adult. Get your tickets today at nwachampionship.com. At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
And welcome back. So we're going to give grades out for Arkansas's game on Saturday against Oklahoma State. We'll start with offense, and a lot of people are probably going to look at me funny when they hear these grades. And I have a rubric also, by the way, that I'll explain here in a minute on how I gave these grades. Arkansas gets 648 yards against Oklahoma State. 15 possessions, 13 went into Oklahoma State territory. Another one was got to midfield. So you hear that and you would think, man, that was a great day offensively. It was the 10th highest offensive yardage output ever for the Razorbacks in a single game. In fact, two of the top 10 in terms of total yards have come in the first two games of this season. They had the number three all-time performance in the opener against UAPB, but then again, they were also playing air in that game. 667.5 yards that the offense is averaging through two games under Bobby Petrino. There's no doubt that he has come in and he has really, put his stamp on this offense. All of that said, when you only have 31 points and you have 648 yards, there's an efficiency problem. And I do these efficiency ratings where basically I take the number of points that you could have scored, the maximum number of points that you could have scored, the number of points that you did score. You tweak the numbers a little bit, and it spits out a number for you. I gave him a C, Ethan. I think that there's an efficiency problem with this offense. There's a finishing problem. It's one thing to get a bunch of yards. It's another thing to finish drives and score points. And that was a real problem for Arkansas. Their second drive, their third drive, they scored touchdowns. I think they got a turnover on their fourth drive, and then they scored on their fifth drive. It was a great start for them offensively. But then you look at about the final 10 drives of the game, and that includes the two in overtime. Not real great.
Yeah, no, I'm going to give them a B-. I'd go between that and a C, because it feels to me like it felt like the equivalent of a baseball or softball team getting on second and third base over and over and hitting into double plays. That's what it felt like to me. It's like
striking out with runners in scoring position.
Yeah, it's like, who cares if you're moving the ball down the field if you can't bring it home? Like, you got to score points to win, and I don't care how many doubles you have in a game if you can't bring them home.
They scored 31.3% of all points possible on Saturday. And when you look at and that's just based on possessions, and then you look at where they were, I mean, they lived in – I don't know the exact number, but I would venture to say that Arkansas took over 50% of its snaps in Oklahoma State territory. There were drives, a lot of drives that began and that even takes away the overtime possessions. There were drives that began in Oklahoma State territory or got there within a play or two. They got to learn to finish these drives. And I think playing Oklahoma State the other day might help them. I don't know. I don't know how good Oklahoma State's defense is relative to the other defenses they're going to play. When Arkansas plays UAB this weekend, Alabama-Birmingham at Razorback Stadium, I'm going to be really interested to see how they finish drives. They finished against UAPB, but that was a total complete mismatch. They finished some against Oklahoma State, did not finish nearly enough. How do they do this weekend? Might help shape how we feel about the offense going into SEC play.
Yep, and I think that this is the type of week where you want to see the offense if they can correct just the silly mental mistakes. And I think they could have a big day against UAB. It's just getting the end zone.
Just to put that number in perspective, Arkansas 31.3% of its points scored. Last year, they averaged 22.6% on offense against SEC teams. Oklahoma State, obviously not an SEC team, but they're close. So better, not good enough. I mean, just to give you an idea, the SEC leader on offense last year was LSU, and they scored at 58.5%. That was an elite offense led by a Heisman Trophy quarterback, Georgia. They were really good last year offensively. They scored on 55% of all their points possible. To me, it feels like if you can get closer to that 37, 38, 39% range, you'll be really good. Petrino last year at Texas A&M, I think they scored somewhere around 35%. So it needs to get better than it was against Oklahoma State, obviously. Defense, I gave them a B. This is based on points and points possible. Oklahoma State, they had some self-inflicted mistakes too. They had a touchdown called off because of a chop block penalty. They had some other penalties that took them, really out of, for instance, the pistol, the finger pistols from the quarterback, Bowman, that took them out of a first and goal situation. They had to settle for a field goal on that drive. But I thought Arkansas defensively played pretty well. Their run defense was as good as it could have been hoped for. They allowed 49 rushing yards to Ollie Gordon, and 12 of them came on his last carry, which was the go-ahead touchdown for them in the second overtime. Gave up some big plays. I thought they played the ball in the air about as well as I have seen them. There were probably four or five one-on-one pass breakups. Those were good. Xavien Sory, I thought he played an outstanding game until he decided to turn into Triple H and suplex a receiver and give Oklahoma State a first down situation in the second overtime. He's really good. He is a really good linebacker. You just got to learn, where you are in the game and where you are, in that situation and not commit that kind of penalty. I was impressed with the defense on Saturday. They looked like they wore out some in the second half. Some of that, again, might be due to the schedule, the fact that they just haven't been tested, before this game in Stillwater. I thought they played well. I gave them a B.
Yeah, I think a B is very fair. I think that they were on the cusp, the way the defense was giving Oklahoma State trouble. I think they were on the cusp of the offense just putting the ball in the end zone one more time on some of those drives that just got across midfield and something happened. I feel like the defense was this close to getting, if the offense gives them that extra score, to just Oklahoma State, you kind of seeing the, not let go of the rope per se, but the defense was dominating them enough that if Oklahoma State gets the ball on their own 20-yard line, I don't think they're going all the way for a touchdown. It's just they got too many short field situations. I liked the defense Saturday, though, at large.
And even for a tired defense, they were making some plays late in the game. I mean, like we mentioned, double overtime. They've got Oklahoma State backed up into a third and long, and then a dumb penalty allows Oklahoma State to get a first down. Oklahoma State plays for a field goal in the first overtime, but, you know, they easily could have popped a big run. That didn't happen. Oklahoma State gets to the 21 on that drive I was talking about after the unsportsmanlike conduct. Could have scored a touchdown there. Kind of got bailed out, I think, a little bit by some technicality on that hard count and, yeah, and offside and false start. But the point is they made enough plays to keep the team in the game. And, you know, even late, whenever they're tired, they were making some plays. They just weren't making them as frequently as they were early, yeah, in the game.
Ultimately, the defense allowed 24 points in regulation.
Yeah.
To a pretty good, like a very experienced Oklahoma State offense.
Yeah, because one of the touchdowns was for a pick six, and we don't put those against Arkansas's defense, obviously. Special teams, I gave them a C-, and I'll tell you how I came up with that is I went back and I looked at all 21 special team snaps for Arkansas. That's extra points, field goals, punts, punt returns, kickoffs, kickoff returns. And you just look at it and say, did that play go the way that Arkansas wanted it to go? Did they make that field goal? Did they make that extra point? Did they muff that punt, or did they fair catch it, you know, the way they were supposed to? Was it a touchback, or was it a good kickoff return? Should he have taken it out of the end zone when he did? Did the kickoff go out of bounds? These are all things that you come up with. And out of those 21 plays, I thought 15 went Arkansas's way. But that's not a real great percentage. I mean, it's like 71% somewhere in there. They got to find something at kicker. I tell you, Ethan, I was shocked in game one when I heard that Kyle Ramsey was going to be their starting kicker, because I'm a big believer that what happens in scrimmages carries over to games. And I know he was hurt in the scrimmages, or at least in one of the scrimmages, but he went 2 for 6 in the scrimmages. Matt Shipley went 6 for 8. I don't understand how you go with the kicker who was 2 for 6 over the kicker who was 6 for 8. And then you see what happened Saturday. Give Ramsey credit for making the field goal that sent it to overtime, but he also missed one, 41 yards. That ought to, it's not a chip shot, but in this day and age, it's not too far from it. You know, that is a range where the field goal should be expected more times than not. Not making that field goal forced Arkansas to go for it on fourth down the next time down the field, when it would have been a field goal from a similar spot on the field. They didn't make that. That was a huge, moment in the game in terms of momentum shifts. And then obviously he misses the field goal in overtime from 46 yards. Certainly that's not all his fault. The wind was doing some weird things there at the end. Not to make excuses for him, but the big thing that happened on that drive was that Taylen Green took a 12-yard sack, mm-hmm, on third down and made a chip shot field goal a lot more difficult than it should have been. They got to find something, though, at kicker. Pittman said as much afterward. He said basically it's a kicking competition again between Shipley and Ramsey. You watch the NFL yesterday and you see Cam Little drill a 53-yarder for the Jaguars that would have been good from 60-plus. You see Jake Bates hit a couple of them for the Lions last night, and I know Bates wouldn't be on this team. But you just think back to 2 years ago, they had two NFL kickers on the roster.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them never got to kick field goals because the other was so good. Now this year, you got two kickers. And I feel like kickers is kind of like quarterback. When you've got two, you don't have one.
Mm-hmm.
And they got to have somebody step up and take this job, because right now field goal is a very concerning thing for Arkansas.
Yeah, and it's a tough look whenever, you do have a love or hate preseason watch list, like, you do have a Lou Groza preseason.
But Shipley, okay, yeah, I know where you're going with this. Shipley has been a semifinalist for the Groza Award 2 times in his career, yeah, including last year at Hawaii.
It's kind of tough to have him on the sideline,
It's strange.
It's, but you know, they see more than we do at practices. There's so many things they take into account. So there's probably a great reason why they went the way they did. But it
I still look at one going 6-for-8 in scrimmages and the other one going 2-for-6, even with an injury.
Yeah.
That screen, something's off. The fact that you go with the one who made 33% of his field goals in scrimmages over the one who made 75%.
Yeah. Regardless, like you said, I think if you have two, you have none. I'm going to give the special teams, I think you were a little generous with C-. I'm giving it D-. I think that your saving grace is Devin Bale had.
He was great.
Some great punts. I mean,
his only mistake was he kicked because he handled kickoffs.
Yeah.
He had a kickoff out of bounds. But I thought his punt, his first punt that downed Oklahoma State, the one.
That was the turning – the fourth down stop on Oklahoma's first drive was a big turning point. But his punt was really huge. I mean, it gave Oklahoma State such a short field.
I thought it helped set up the first touchdown.
It did. I mean, because they were going to run the ball the first two plays to just try and get out of their end zone. It gave Arkansas the ball back right where it had to punt before. So that was a big play. That's the saving grace. That and Ramsey's 45-yard make to send it to overtime. Other than that, special teams is a huge thing that lost you the game. So
Tanya made some good and I watched Isaiah play in high school. Isaiah got taken off of punt returns at Fayetteville High School because he couldn't catch the punts consistently enough. And so I marvel at the fact that he's able to catch some of those kicks that he is able to do. And I don't put the muff punt on him. Cross Johnson is playing way too close to him. And two times Oklahoma State takes advantage of the fact that they can block him into the returner. And so that's one thing that Arkansas is going to have to fix down the road.
The problem, that was a huge problem. If it happens one time early in the game like it did and Arkansas dodged that bullet, got it back, you live with it and it needs to be teaching. It happens twice, you have to change something. That was the turning point of the game, was that muff punt.
You can stay on top of all Razorback sports with a digital subscription to the Hogs Illustrated app. It gives you complete access to all of our content at wholehogsports.com. Monthly subscriptions begin at $17. You can join now at hogsillustrated.com/subscribe or call 479-684-5509. Let's talk real quick, Ethan, about your SEC power rankings. Let's start with Arkansas, where you've got them, and maybe you've got them behind, because I think that ruffled a couple of feathers.
Yeah, no, I put them at 12, which I bumped them up a spot. I mean, after a loss, gave them up.
Because Auburn did so poorly that they fell down.
But it did neutralize because South Carolina jumped them. Mm-hmm. So, I think that they were impressive enough Saturday that you see the potential. But end of the day, winning matters. And I have Vanderbilt at 11. You know, sue me. But Vanderbilt's 2-0, and they, unlike Arkansas, they let a lead slip away against Virginia Tech Week 1, and they found a way to win.
They won the game. They have beaten a Power 5 team.
Tell me if you're Arkansas. If you're Arkansas, would you trade right now your 1-1 resume for Vanderbilt's resume? And I think you'd say, yes, absolutely. I will take 2-0 over 1-1. And, you know, I don't think Vanderbilt's going to stay at 11, but right now, after week two, they have two victories, including one over ACC member Virginia Tech, picked number 6 in the preseason, and they handle business against Alcorn State. So,
who have you got below Arkansas?
Mississippi State.
Arkansas plays them.
Auburn.
Plays them.
Kentucky.
No.
Terrible, terrible performance by them against South Carolina. They have a major quarterback problem. And then Florida dead last. I'm not budging on Florida. I almost put Kentucky last, but I saw too much from Florida week one that I said said no more.
I thought South Carolina beating Kentucky was the shocker of the weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, when you're covering a game in person, at least for me, I'm not paying attention to other scores. I did have a sense of what was going on with Texas and Michigan because I heard other people talking about it in the press box. But, you know, I was walking out of the press box in Stillwater, and I looked up and I saw that Kentucky-South Carolina score. Like, whoa, that was the game I felt most confident picking last week, because I thought Kentucky had looked really good against Southern Miss, and I thought South Carolina had looked really bad against Old Dominion, and it was played in Lexington. I thought this is a no-brainer. If you're going to bet on a game this week, bet on Kentucky and South Carolina. Yeah. And woo.
I will tell you,
far from the truth.
How bad does this week's lineup have to be for College Game Day to be going to Columbia for LSU, South Carolina?
They could be in Madison for Alabama, Wisconsin.
They could, but I guess they didn't want to. They see Fox has that game, and they're like, oh.
Well, they were there the other day, though. I mean, Fox had the Michigan Texas game.
There's better games across the. I mean, Oklahoma Tulane in my head's a better game than South Carolina LSU. Missouri Boston College is a better game. But, I mean, if you show up to Columbia, Missouri for Mizzou-Boston College's College Game Day, I mean, That's just sick stuff.
That's actually not a bad. How many times does ESPN get the chance to go to Boston College for a game
well,
that would matter?
In Missouri. Oh, well, and Columbus. Still.
Take all this back then. Still. How about this? How many times they get to feature Boston College in a game?
Never.
Never.
But they say, hey, this South Carolina team, let's go watch the team that almost lost to Old Dominion. Let's go to their campus for them to play the LSU team that lost to Southern Cal and looked not great against Nicholls State. So, I don't know. They got to have some reason for going there, but I'm still not sold on South Carolina. But, hey, their defense has not been bad early in the year, and defense will carry you a long way. The offense can figure stuff out over the course of a year oftentimes, but a defense will keep you in a game.
Thought Texas looked really good in beating Michigan, at least, you know, the little bit of the highlights that I saw from it. Alabama got a scare on Saturday night against South Florida.
Would never know it from the final.
But they end up, you know, end up pulling away at the end. What else? Oklahoma. We'll talk with Barry Trammell from the Tulsa World here in just a minute. But they had a big scare against Houston in a game that they were favored to win.
Most impressive was Tennessee to me. I mean,
yeah,
I thought they beat NC State. I didn't think they would just obliterate
them. That offense is rolling. Well, they scored 69 and 51.
And the defense has slept on too right now because they have been lights out through 2 weeks. I get it. Your first game was against whoever they played, Chattanooga. But, I mean, to hold NC State to 143 yards, that's really impressive.
Hmm. Arkansas on Saturday, they'll play Alabama Birmingham, the UAB Blazers. They're 1-1. They're coming off a 32-6 loss at Louisiana Monroe the other night. On our podcast tomorrow, we're going to speak with Alex Mortensen, who played football for the Razorbacks. He's the offensive coordinator right now at UAB. Arkansas opening this week as a 21.5-point favorite over UAB at Razorback Stadium. ESPN's FPI gives the Razorbacks a 92.8% chance to win this game. When we come back, Barry Trammell, a columnist with the Tulsa World, will talk with us about what he saw between the Razorbacks and the Cowboys on Saturday. But first, another word from our sponsors.
Taste, sip, sample, and discover the very best restaurants and chefs Northwest Arkansas has to offer at the Bite Experience at the LPGA, a unique culinary experience on site at the Northwest Arkansas Championship. Tickets are available Friday, September 27th through Sunday, September 29th, offering access to the best golf viewing and food and beverage samples from over 30 local restaurants. You don't want to miss this. Tickets are available for $45 a day. Get yours before they sell out at BiteNWA.com. At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
And welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass, who have been serving their community since 1971, committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. Come by and see them at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. We're joined now by Barry Trammell. He's a columnist for the Tulsa World. Just an institution in Oklahoma sports. One of my favorite columnists, I can tell you that for sure. Barry Trammell is joining us now. Barry, we appreciate you being with us.
Well, thanks. Enjoyed being around the Arkansas Press Corps on Saturday. It's been a long time. I guess we'll be seeing more of each other now that the Sooners are in the SEC. But it was fun having you guys in Stillwater.
Yeah, you're an SEC and a Big 12 columnist now. I mean, does that change maybe your does it diversify what you feel like you can write?
Oh, yeah, it changes my workload more than anything. I was telling somebody, you know, when I got started, I like to follow all the teams in the conference of the schools I cover.
Mm-hmm.
So when I got started, that meant I had to follow six schools: Colorado, Nebraska, Missouri, Iowa State, Kansas State. Six schools.
Mm-hmm.
Today, I got to follow 30 schools, 15 in the Big 12, 15 in the SEC. So I'm lucky if I can remember what town those schools are in, much less, you know, who the coaches are and who they're playing from week to week. But it's fun getting to see new places, new teams like the Razorbacks on Saturday.
get a lot of territory to cover. Used to, you know, the Big Eight, not a very big geographical footprint. Now, the Big 12 goes from about Florida to Utah. Let's talk about Saturday. What did that win mean for Oklahoma State?
Well, I think it meant it was validation or recommitment of their culture. You know, Mike Gundy, Arkansas shouldn't feel too bad. Cowboys have been winning games like that for 5 years and maybe longer, games they really have no business winning. And he's sitting there, you know, winning. And he always talks about, you know, as a culture win, we don't, when we get down, we don't give up. You know, nobody gripes, nobody points fingers. They do what we tell them, and we got a chance to win. So anytime you win a game like that, that's sort of validation of that. And the other thing is, you know, they've got high aspirations. Now, if you watch them play, you say that team's not going anywhere. But they tend to get better as the season goes. So it's better to improve and learn lessons with a win than a defeat. So, you know, the victory always helps. But, you know, they have designs on the playoff and the Big 12 title. But, of course, everybody knows they're a long way from that after watching them play Saturday.
I want you to explain the culture stuff. Maybe go a little bit deeper into that because, you know, I've watched Oklahoma State for a long time, even before Gundy. But I can't remember a time when Oklahoma State has had, you know, such a sustained level of success like they've had under Mike Gundy. I wonder from your seat, how has he changed things and made them believe that they can win the way they have won? And, I mean, that's 168 wins now in 20 years for him.
Yeah, you know, OSU going back, you can go back 10 years, you can go back now, you can go back 15 years, I think, to 08 is really – whatever timeline in there you want to take, OSU generally comes in 9, 10, or 11 in Power 5 schools' victories. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm not saying they're a top 10 school, but they're a really good, consistent. And the thing about Gundy is he's got this persona, you know, he's sort of a shoot from the hip. He's lost his filter. He'll say anything, sort of free thought. He grows his hair out, you know, just sort of acts like a, you know, sort of a swashbuckler more than a coach. But inside, he runs a really solid program. And the staff is constant. They don't have a lot of staff turnover. His assistants have been with him a long time. He'll change a coordinator sort of on a regular basis. But the longtime staff guys, they don't change. He's got a method of what kind of guys he wants to recruit and how he's going to win. And they stick to it, and it's just, it works for them. Now, they haven't won big. You know, they've won just the one Big 12 title in the last 15 years, or 25, the history of the conference, really. Mm-hmm. But they're always, you know, they're always in contention, it seems like. In the Big 12's found parity in the last 4 years. Seven schools have made the Big 12 title game. So it's getting passed around a lot. The only school that's been twice is not Texas. It's not OU. It's OSU. So he's doing something right, and he's very consistent, and things always are all sort of on a steady course in Stillwater.
I don't know how much you've paid attention to Arkansas over the years, but my thought on Gundy's program at Oklahoma State, it reminds me a lot of Houston Nutt's years at Arkansas in that they're always going to have a solid team that's going to give most of their opponents a good game. There might be a game or two a year that makes their fans want to pull their hair out, but it's not a great program, but it's far from a bad program.
Yeah, and that sounds good, you know. I'm trying to remember. Was Houston the coach when the Razorbacks won the West that year? I can't remember.
Yeah, he won two West titles.
Okay, there you go. There you go. And you know, that seems like a far shore for Arkansas today to make an SEC title game. And you can imagine or you can envision OSU sort of letting go of the rope and falling back into the great unwashed. So I sort of like that. You know, ironic you brought up Houston's name. He actually quarterbacked for Oklahoma State the last time the Razorbacks played Oklahoma State.
Yep.
So Cowboys used three quarterbacks. had another is the guy I'm on the radio with here in Oklahoma City, Jim Traver, who's a former Major League Baseball player.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to imagine those guys playing college football quarterback because, you know, they hadn't seen Houston in a couple, 3 years. But, you know, Traver's a long way from his college days. So it just shows how far we are from that 1980 launch of the the series and now the relaunch. But not like that. I like that Houston nut. You know, Arkansas over the years, over the decades, has shown that it can win, even in the SEC. Now, it's not easy, but they have done it. But you got to have a plan, whether, you know, when it was Petrino or Houston nut or whoever. You got to have a plan and you got to stick to it. You can't just be switching coaches every 3 or 4 years. You got to believe sort of in what you're doing.
What were your thoughts on the Razorbacks after watching them on Saturday?
Well, I thought they were incredibly talented. You know, I thought I was watching, you know, the Dallas Cowboys or somebody on the receiver, C.D. Lamb and guys like that, catching the passes in the first half. And Taylen Green, I thought, was just a an impossible guy to contain. And the running game, and I really don't know how good Jackson is, because some of the holes he was running through were just so wide. But I was very impressed with the talent level of Arkansas. And I thought defensively they were getting after OSU pretty good. So I thought, hey, this is a real football team. And I still feel that way. I think it looks to me like a lot of talent. Gundy after the game said, hey, they've really beefed up that roster in the offseason, which you can do these days, right, with the portal and really do something different. But I did think Arkansas got mistake-prone, well, even in the first half. I mean, that's a game, really. Razorbacks should have been up, I don't know, 24-3, 27-7, something like that. And it's 21-7. OSU gets the ball to start the half, has a long drive, kicks a field goal. It's 21-10, and, you know, they still got 22 minutes to play, 28, 23 minutes. Anybody's game at that point. So I thought Arkansas, with the turnovers and failing to capitalize on some opportunities, I thought Arkansas left the door open for OSU.
I may have been critical. I gave Arkansas's offense a C for the game, but, you know, and you look at it, and they had 648 yards. But Barry, I've read your stuff for a long time, and you make a great point over and over. It's not about the yards, it's about the points, it's about the production.
Yeah.
And to have 31 points when you have 648 yards and you've got 14 possessions that reach midfield, that's just not winning football.
No, you're right. And Arkansas did that. They moved up and down the field. The only thing that got in the way of the passing game was the running game, and vice versa. But OSU did a pretty good job of stabilizing and not letting them get too far down the rabbit hole. And when the Hogs got close, you know, it, a couple of times they didn't punch it in, and the special teams weren't great for Arkansas. I thought that's a place where OSU had an edge. So you gotta, you know, you gotta turn those yards into points. And when you look at somebody like Ollie Gordon, you know, he's second straight game. He's thinking Heisman Trophy coming in, and now he's, you know, just trying to make all Payne County after these two rushing totals. But, you know, Cowboys still found a way to use him, get near the goal line, pitch it to him, dump it to him on a pass. You know, you got to, when you can smell the end zone, you got to figure out a way to get in there. And I thought OSU late in the game did that better than Arkansas.
I've always felt like a player, regardless of sport, when they have a breakout year and they come back, it's hard for them to replicate the numbers of the year before. And I kind of think that might be what's going on with Ollie Gordon right now. The coordinators, the defensive coordinators that they're going to face this year, they probably spent a lot of time in the offseason trying to figure out how do we slow him down, that maybe they didn't have that type of time to figure out, you know, on a week-to-week basis last year as they're, you know, preparing for other teams. It might be a tough year for him.
Yeah, and Oklahoma State's going to have to adjust that offense, because you said it, even late last year, you know, Central Florida, Cowboys went down there and Central Florida says, you're not running on us. Do whatever the hell you want to do, but you're not running on us. And Ollie had like 20-something yards and they got beat 45-3 or something crazy. So I thought Arkansas did a really good job game planning for the Cowboys. Alan Bowman hit some passes on him late. Brennan Presley made some plays. But I thought for the most part, the Arkansas defensive game plan was pretty solid. And I thought the, Petrino sort of won in a landslide in that first half. OSU's young defensive coordinator didn't know what hit him. But they made some adjustments. They did a better job of containing Taylen Green. And when they kept him in the pocket, he wasn't nearly as effective. And I think that helped turn the game around. They put a spy on him. If they had one in the first half, he didn't do a very good job. In the second half, they much better job. So I liked what I saw there from Arkansas's game plan. Just didn't end up in victory.
I want to ask you about the other team you cover, Arkansas's new SEC brethren over in over in Norman. The Sooners did not look very good Saturday night against Houston. They were a big favorite, and they only went 16-12. I know you watched the game. What'd you see?
Well, I saw a team that's not very good, and that's what surprised me. It's one thing to play poorly, but what if they're playing as good as they can? It's, you know, they sort of struggled against Temple, and but, you know, the Owls aren't any good, and you sort of understand, well, they just can't get them up emotionally. But after you play poorly game one, no excuses in game two unless you're just not capable of it. They really are not blocking anybody. Their receivers are hurt, and their quarterback is young. So there's not a whole lot left. Defense is excellent. You know, the curse of the Sooners of the last 10, 15 years is when they finally – you know, when they have a great offense, the defense stinks, and now they've got a defense, and the offense has fallen off the cliff. So I guess people can turn it around. I've seen teams get much better quickly, but that better happen because Tulane's a pretty good team, and then after that, Tennessee's coming to town, and I can promise you, the Volunteers beat North Carolina State 51-10. It would not break Josh Heupel's heart to come to Norman and win 51-10. That would put a smile on his face.
Yeah, that's
so. I'm much more pessimistic about Oklahoma than I was coming into this season.
How worried do you think they are about their SEC schedule?
Now, say that again.
How worried do you think Oklahoma is about its SEC schedule?
I think they're worried about everybody except Maine. They got Maine coming in November. But, you know, the SEC handed them an unbelievably difficult schedule. They play six teams that now are ranked, I don't know, wherever LSU is, 16 or 17, wherever. They play six of those in the top 16 or 17. Plus, South Carolina looks revived. It went to Lexington and won in a rout. So, you know, maybe Auburn's going to be easier than anybody thought, but they play at Ole Miss, they play Texas and Dallas, they play at Missouri, Alabama and Tennessee come to Norman. I think there's a concern for a lot of things, but starting with Tulane, because the Green Wave, you know, could have, maybe should have, would have beaten Kansas State on Saturday. So that's nothing going to be easy at all.
Were you surprised that Brent Venables got the long contract extension?
No, that's what we do in college football. We do two things with coaches after a season. You give them an extension or you fire them. That's what they do. And if you win big, you get a big raise. And if you don't win big, you get a small raise. So it's a sport that's economically gone crazy. So that's just what they do. I think they believe in Venables, sort of the way George and Jerry on Seinfeld believed in Kramer when he got arrested in L.A. for being the Hillside Strangler. And they said, he didn't do it. We're pretty sure. And that's the way I think OU is about Brent Venables. He's going to get it done. We're pretty sure. So I think they're sort of they sort of had to stay with him, even if they'd want to make a change at some point, because he has changed the defensive culture, and that's no small thing. That's a big time makeover. Mm-hmm. If they can just get the offense now in gear, and you know, it seems like it'd be a lot easier to change an offense than a defense. So I'm reasonably optimistic about the future. I just think this season they just turned out to have a sort of a raw team at the most inopportune time, shall we say.
When do you think Bedlam comes back?
Well, I'm not sure it's going to anytime soon. You know, everybody talks about the scheduling. Can't fit him in the schedule, blah, blah, blah. I think OU's fine without playing OSU. I think OSU's fine without playing OU. I think that's a sad commentary, but I think that's just the truth. I think a lot of the fans feel that way. I don't – the only real pressure being put on them to come back is by the media, and they don't really listen to us. So I think the one thing that could expedite it is if we have a change in structure, you know, which maybe we will, maybe we won't the next few years, where everybody's playing each other on the power level much more often. And you get rid of three rum-dums on the schedules. You know, OU sort of thought they had four rum-dums, no offense to Houston. But if the non-conference schedules get beefed up, then I think they'll probably get back together pretty soon. Otherwise, I don't anticipate any massive interest in playing each other.
Of course, you never know what the conferences are going to look like down the road. I don't think Texas and A&M could have dreamed 5 years ago that they'd be conference opponents anytime soon either. Let's get you out of there, or get you out of here on this, Barry. SEC, I think, probably has two of the bigger, most notable wins this year with Texas beating Michigan. I thought Georgia looked great beating Clemson. But you know, outside of that, it hadn't been a real great couple of weeks for the conference. What are your thoughts on the league so far this year?
Well, SEC's 5-6. Against other Power 5 leagues or Power 4 leagues. So, yeah, Georgia and Texas is a formidable duo, but the rest of the league does look pretty pedestrian, and even some of that includes teams that haven't lost in the Power 5, like Oklahoma. One of those five wins is OU, and the Sooners certainly don't look like world beaters.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the league, frankly, it was a little bit that way last year. You know, I mean, Georgia and Alabama ended up having great years. Georgia was probably the best team. Alabama made the playoff, but I don't know that the rest of the conference was all that spiffy last season, comparatively so. So, you know, I'm trying to tread lightly on my new brothers in the SEC, or my new neighbors, whatever we're supposed to call each other. But you know, the theory over here, you know, when you go from Siloam to West Siloam, the theory becomes the SEC power, the SEC dominance. That's an Alabama Georgia thing, and every once in a while LSU raises its head.
Mm-hmm.
So. I got to tell you, the first half of the Arkansas-OSU game Saturday, I thought, now I know what these guys are talking about. And then the second half, and you say, oh, wait a minute. So we'll just have to see. But it does look to me like the SEC below the top two or three might be not that special. And yet you look at the AP poll, and six of the top seven teams are in the SEC. So who knows? Ole Miss and Missouri don't have tough enough schedules that we're even going to really know, I don't think. So some good scheduling there for the Rebels and the Tigers.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a byproduct right now of teams just hadn't really played anybody to this point, you know, in the top 6-7 like you were talking about, other than the two we mentioned who have been awfully impressive. Barry Trammell of the Tulsa World, we appreciate you being with us.
Tried to do it. See you guys soon.
All right, we'll see you down the road. And we appreciate you being with us on our podcast today. We'll be back with another tomorrow. Until then, hope you'll visit us at wholehogsports.com for all of our Razorback coverage. Have a great day, everyone.